Hey, you're listening to the Casper Faith Podcast, where you can catch up on and re-listen to encouraging messages shared by the staff here at the church. Thank you so much for joining us. We hope these words inspire you, challenge you, and expose you to God's love in a meaningful way. Enjoy the message.
We are on week 5 of our fall, or maybe you could call it our winter series, take your pick, called The House, and the theme verse is found in your sermon section of the Life Group homework. It's in your notes. And reading it, let's read this together. Because my prayer is that God will really take this principle, He'll take this whole concept of us being the house of God, that we will really get it down into our souls, into our beings, and understand that. And it says, let's read it together. I pray that Christ will make His home in your hearts through faith. I pray that you may have your roots and foundation in love. And that's what Paul said. He says, Jesus doesn't want to be a guest who just pops in for a visit, says hi, and then leaves. Jesus isn't a renter who is just staying for a short while and in a few months' time or a year's time, he's checking out and he moves on someplace else. He says, no, Jesus wants to come and make His home in your heart. And that means every part of our heart, every aspect, not just certain places. And so in this series, we're going room by room by room, likening the different rooms of a house to different areas of our life. And we're realizing how Christ wants to be in every room. And we're asking ourselves the question, this question every week, because here's the thing. How many have ever painted a wall before in your house? Now, when you said, I'm going to paint this wall blue, and the wall didn't like it, how many had the wall say, no way, Jose, and leave the house? One person. We got a wise guy in here. No, your wall doesn't move. Your house does not object. When you want to rip out some cabinets or remodel something, tear a wall down, put a wall up, the house cooperates with you fully. The house doesn't get into an argument with you. And yet sometimes we, the house of God, we get into an argument. We resist the remodeling, the changes that Jesus wants to make in us that would make us more fit His personality, His tastes, His values, His character, His agenda. And so this is the question we're asking ourselves every week for this series. If we could see it on the screen, it says, will you let Jesus dwell in you, in every part of you, every room of your life? Will you let Christ live in every room, every area of your life? So far, the rooms, let's do a quick review. The first room we looked at was the study. The study where you'd keep like books and resources, but this represents our thoughts, the imaginations, and it's really the control room of the house because what we think about, what we focus on, that's who we become. And so it's really making sure that we're renewing our minds in Christ, in His Word, each and every day. The next room we looked at was the dining room, which symbolizes our appetites and our desires. And we saw how Christ desires. What is it that Jesus is hungry for? Jesus is hungry for people to come to God. He says, I have food to eat that you don't know about. And He was talking about seeing people come to know the Father, enter relationship with Him. And so for us, we realize that evangelism, witnessing, needs to be a priority in our lives. That we need to be people who are praying for our unsaved neighbors and friends and coworkers and classmates, people that are outside of a relationship with God, we need to pray for the not yet Christians that they would come to know Christ. We need to be praying with them when they're sick, when they're going through a tough time, offer to pray so that they can see God show up and do a miracle for them and they realize this God really loves me. I am a Christian today because our Christian neighbors talked to my mom and says, can we pray for Craig to be healed from allergies? And it was that prayer that brought us into the kingdom. Your prayers are powerful. Pray for your neighbors, your friends who are not yet Christians and ask them when they have a need that if you can pray for them. Share with them. Witness if God opens a door. Invite them to church. the evangelism, the dining room, needs to be a major room in our house. The next room we talked about was the living room, and we said how that represented our prayer life. Just as you invite a friend into the living room and you sit down and you talk with them, Jesus wants to be our best friend. He wants us to be friends of God. And so we need to talk with Jesus and let Jesus talk with us through the Bible. As we read the Bible, he talks to us. And also the Holy Spirit. He'll nudge us. He'll prompt us. He'll convict us of different things. And that's how we develop the living room, this conversation, this communion with Christ. Last week, we looked at the bedroom, which symbolized sexual purity and also marriage, having a strong marriage. And so these are some areas that we've looked at so far. Today, we're going to look at the rec room, the family room. And if you're taking notes this morning, what does the rec room, the family room represent? It represents leisure time and relationships. It represents leisure time and our relationships. There is a chart that we're going to show up here, and there are 168 hours in 1 week, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And we have listed there normal activities and approximations. The normal work week is 40 hours. Commuting to and from work, if you have a 30 minutes each day, 5 days a week, that would be 2.5 hours. Preparing and eating meals, 2 hours daily, is 14 hours. If you get 7 hours of sleep a day, then you spend 49 hours a week sleeping. Other things like chores, taking care of the kids, maintenance, taking care of the car, laundry, helping with homework, all those types of things. Running the kids to school, 2.5 hours a day is 17.5 hours a week. And then personal grooming, an hour a day to shower, shave, you know, brush your teeth, your hair, your makeup, getting dressed at night, getting ready for bed, brushing your teeth, all the things that go with it. If you do an hour a day, then you've got 7 hours in the week. That leaves 38 hours of spare time. Now, again, these are approximations. I realize some of you, maybe you work more, or maybe you work less a week. Maybe your commute is longer or shorter. Some of you may be saying, man, 10 minutes is all it takes me to get ready, you know, and I just fly out of the house. Where some of you say, I'm a prima donna, or you have a teenage daughter, and they, you know, she takes 2-3 hours a day to get ready, you know. So you might have to adjust these, but average, we probably have somewhere in the neighborhood of 30 to 40 hours of spare time. And the question is, what do we do with this spare time in our lives? How do we invest it? How do we use it? Who do we spend it with? What we're going to have you do in your life groups is in your notes, we give you this chart, and we're going to ask you to kind of figure out, even come to life group and be ready and say, how much spare time do I really have as I go through the week? Because a lot of times what happens is we say, man, I don't have any spare time. But we would be surprised if we just kept track how much time we really do have. And so this morning, with that amount of spare time, what do we do with it? Our relationships, our leisure time. How do we make the most so that our rec room, our family room, is a place that Jesus can dwell in? A place that Jesus says, man, this really fits me. I love being here with you, that Jesus dwells with us in our leisure time and relationships. We give you 5 keys to make this room a place where Jesus wants to live in. Key number one this morning is keep entertainment in perspective. Keep it in perspective. Genuine joy comes from fellowship with God. Genuine joy comes from fellowship with God. You know, the amount of entertainment choices in the Western world is just mind-boggling. It's overwhelming. There's hunting, there's fishing, there's camping, golfing, canoeing, tennis, you know, so many different outdoor activities. You have wintertime activities like downhill skiing, cross-country skiing, sledding, snowshoeing. There's indoor activities like rock climbing, bowling, concerts, plays, movie going. Yet despite all of the different avenues of fun activities, we still see people today abuse substances. people leading lives that are deeply troubled and depressed, and even people that commit suicide. And some of those who commit suicide are those that have, they can do any kind of activity because they have so much money, and it doesn't matter. We just look at our society and we realize that entertainment does not provide long-lasting, genuine joy. We're told in the Bible that it only comes from a fellowship with God. Psalm 84, verse 10. It's the verse that is based out of the last song that we sang in worship today. For a day in your courts is better than 1,000 elsewhere. One day in your house, one day in your presence, God, is better than 1,000 somewhere else in the world if I do not have you. We're told in Psalm 16, verse 11, that you make known to me the path of life. In your presence there is fullness of joy. At your right hand are pleasures forevermore. Many people try to find joy and fulfillment outside of God in some kind of activity. But true satisfaction comes from being in right relationship and then spending close time with Him. We mentioned last week how the rooms are closely connected. The rec room is closely connected to the living room, having the fellowship with God, communing with God. If you want real joy, then you need to take time for that. And this is what happens sometime. We get caught up in our activities. We hang with our friends. We watch television. We get into Facebook. We do whatever we're doing. And we go through the day, and we haven't taken time to talk to God. And when we do that, we have to realize that all the other leisure activities are not going to be fulfilling and fun, because genuine joy comes from a relationship with God. And so that needs to be priority on our list. Don't exclude the living room. Don't exclude fellowship with God to do your leisure time. That's the first key to making the rec room a place where Jesus dwells with us. The second key this morning is don't use entertainment to escape reality. Don't use entertainment to escape reality. The reality is all of us have responsibilities that we need to tend to. Life is not one big party. How many have discovered that? You know, when you're a kid, all you have to do is play. It's fun. Now, wise parents give their kids chores so that they realize life isn't one big party. Someday you will have to work. Someday you will be on your own. You will have to pay the bills. You'll have to have a place to live and all these things. And life is not a party. It's interesting, but the author of Ecclesiastes, he talked about feasting and enjoying life in the same sentence as he did work. Chapter 3, verse 13, it says, "Everyone should eat and drink and take pleasure in all his toil. This is God's gift to man." You see, God is suggesting that people not just get their fulfillment from a pursuit of amusement, but also from work. Because here's the thing, do you realize that work is a gift from God? It's a gift from God. In the Garden of Eden, Adam had to tend the garden, and that was before the fall. Now, some of you thought work was part of the curse. Sometimes it feels like it. But no, work was a gift from God before Adam and Eve sinned. See, Jesus doesn't want us to fritter our life away on just fun and games. He wants us to be productive. That's part of his original blueprint. And we need to realize this. I've seen students get in trouble because they spend their whole night texting or tweeting or, you know, or talking, and they didn't get their homework done. Or maybe it's not that, but they spend the whole night Facebooking or the whole night playing video games, the whole night, you know, watching the series of The Walking Dead, getting caught up on it, whatever it might be. And they spend all their time and they don't get their responsibilities done. But it's not just young people. I've seen adults do the same thing, where we get so caught up in our leisure that we don't fulfill our responsibilities. I'm not talking to workaholics here. There are some of you, you work way too much. and you need to learn to have fun. And I'm also not talking about just taking a brief break. I understand you've been studying a lot or working a lot. You maybe need to just to turn on the game for a little bit or pick up a book and read something. You need to decompress. What we're talking about is a person that takes 2, 3, 4 hours a day on leisure and neglects their studies, neglects household responsibilities, neglects family relationships and things that are responsibilities they have. Or the person that says, well, I don't want to get a job because that infringes on my free time. I've known people like that. And this idea of leisure can become a god, and it can lead to our ruin. Did you realize that King David, the reason he committed adultery with Bathsheba was because of this very concept of being lazy in the area of responsibilities? 2 Samuel chapter 11, verse 1, in the spring of the year, the time when kings go out to battle, and David was the king, David sent Joab and his servants with him and all Israel, but David remained in Jerusalem. David should have been out fighting. He should have been defending the nation. That was his responsibility. That was his God-given role. That was his work. And instead of doing it, he was lazy. We talked about the rooms being interconnected. Because David failed in the rec room, he failed in the bedroom. He lost his sexual purity. And it went downhill. The lady he had an affair with, Bathsheba, she got pregnant. David tries to cover it up. He gives her husband, Uriah, a furlough, lets him come home, and wants him to sleep with her so that, hey, everyone thinks it's his baby, but Uriah says, if my men are out in the field, I will not spend time with my wife, and he stays outside, doesn't even go home, doesn't even see his wife, and Uriah knew what his responsibility was. And David didn't. So David says, I got to cover this up. He has Uriah killed in battle. He says, hey, pull away. Just make it look like it was a war accident. The consequence of that, Bathsheba's baby died, and also three of David's sons died because of that. It's interesting, but when you look in the Bible, when something is stolen, you replace it four times. David took one life, Uriah. He had to give it four times. He lost four of his sons. All because he didn't handle the rec room properly. And so this idea of escaping to get away from the realities of life, very, very dangerous. Fulfill your responsibilities. Make sure you don't let that, because lack of discipline in one area can easily flow over into the other rooms of the house. Okay, let's take a look at number three, the third key of the rec room so Jesus can dwell in us and be pleased and have fellowship with us. Choose wise, not wayward entertainment. Choose wise entertainment, not wayward entertainment. So what is wise? Well, Psalm 111, verse 10 says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So let me ask you this. Would you be afraid if Jesus was sitting in the room doing what you're doing, watching what you're watching, going where you're going? Would you be afraid if Jesus was right there with you? If you are, maybe you shouldn't be doing it. That's the fear of the Lord. Or what about this? Would you be afraid of doing what you're doing if the rapture came? If Jesus comes right now and you're doing what you're doing, how many know sitting in church is a good thing to be in when the rapture comes? Yep. Yeah, you say I'd be comfortable, but what about this afternoon? Or what about tonight? Or what about next Friday night or next Saturday night? If Jesus came at any time, and you're in the middle of your leisure pursuit, you're hanging out with that person, and you're doing what you maybe do, would you be afraid? The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. If there's any twinge of fear about something you're doing, the wise thing is to evaluate it and say, this possibly doesn't please God, and to do something else. Some other questions to ask us, and by the way, all of these questions we have there in your notes because we want you to kind of reflect and evaluate on these, so they're listed for you there. The next question is, does this discredit or cast a shadow on your Christian witness? If a non-Christian saw you doing this or going to this place, Would it cause them to stumble? Would it make them feel that, man, I don't need to turn to Jesus? I mean, he's a Christian and he does it. I do the same thing. If there's no difference between them and me, I don't need Christ. That's something to evaluate. Does it cause a not-yet Christian to say, I don't need to become one because there's no difference between us? The next question to ask is sometimes, and really it's not a question, but it's a statement, sometimes it's not the activity, but how we react to the activity. The ref makes a bad call. You hit the golf ball into the sand trap 15 times in one round. Someone nabs the monster bull elk that you've been tracking for days. You feel angry. You want to blow your temper. You want to rip into the ref, even swear. How do you react in the midst of your leisure, in the midst of your entertainment? Do you display wayward responses or wise responses? The next question, are my interactions with not-yet Christians influencing them more towards Christ or me more towards the world? Jesus was called a friend of sinners. He welcomed them. He went to their homes for dinner. But he had a greater influence on them, and he also never went alone. He took the 12 disciples with him. Jesus wasn't the lone ranger. He had a holy posse, and together they influenced people for the kingdom. They weren't led astray. And so you need to ask, who's having the bigger influence? It's important for us not to isolate ourselves from people that are away from God. We need to be friends of sinners. That's part of the what room? Help me here. The dining room, yeah. That's part of the dining room. Remember, they're connected together. So be part of that, but don't let them influence you more. 1 Corinthians 15 says, evil company corrupts good habits. I told my kids when they're growing up, show me your friends, I'll show you your future. Those relationships strongly influence you, so just make sure you have the right balance and they're not tearing you down, that they're building you up. Another question is, does this activity restore or ravage my soul? Does this activity restore or ravage my soul? You say, what do I mean by that? A few weeks back, I went golfing. And it was one of those where you pay a certain amount and you can golf all you can golf before sundown. That's a great deal. And so I got in my 18 rounds. Remember how I said earlier about hitting the ball in the sand trap 15 times? That was my round. Plus the water quite a few times and out of bounds a few times. And it was like one of the worst rounds I've shot in a long time. And I'm telling you, as I kept golfing, it just got worse. And I'm getting more and more frustrated and more angry. And Yosemite Sam, sissifressa, you know. It was not good. And it was 5 o'clock. I could have gone in another round of golf. But as I'm evaluating here, I'm going, this is not refreshing to me. This is really discouraging. It's tearing me down. And I feel like swearing. I mean, it was bad. And it's like, you know what? I'm quitting. Yeah, it's free golf. I've already paid for it. I can get it as much as I want. But I realized what was happening to my soul at the time, so I walked away from it. And there's times when we're doing something, there may be, it's not a wrong activity, but it is just weighing us down, and we would be better off investing our time doing something else. Be wise. Is it restoring you or is it ravaging you? Okay, next question to ask. By the way, how many ever hit 15 sand traps before? One, okay, I see that hand. Yeah, thank you. Misery loves company. Okay, next question here, or really it's a statement. Satisfying sinful desires is not a valid source of entertainment. In Daniel 5, King Belshazzar of Babylon hosts a drunken revelry. They're getting just drunk, high in the sky, all this kind of thing. And in the process, he takes the gold and silver vessels that his dad, King Nebuchadnezzar, had taken from the temple in Jerusalem that were used for the worship of God. And he begins to take those vessels and offer sacrifices to his pagan gods. And in the process, God judges him, and that very night, he is killed, and the kingdom's taken away from him. His Leisure was out and out sin. Another example of this sometimes is what we do distracts us. It's maybe not out and out sin, but it causes us not to make wise decisions. And a great example is found in Mark chapter 6, verses 21 to 26. King Herod had a birthday party, invited his high-ranking officers and the chief men of the region, and they come, and Herod's stepdaughter does a dance. And it says that it highly pleased them. Commentators think that it was a very seductive, lewd dance because it was only men who were there, and so they were very pleased, very impressed. And in the heat of the moment, Herod is so caught up, he says, "What would you like? I'll give you anything you want, even up to half of my kingdom." And the girl says, "I want the head of John the Baptist." And it says when Herod heard this, he was grieved. He didn't want John to die. And so he ordered the execution. He murdered John. And here's the thing. Sometimes our entertainment, we can get so caught up in the moment that we lose discernment. We lose good judgment. It distracts us from what is right and what is wrong. We need to be careful that our entertainment and our bids for fun do not put us in situations where our judgment is weakened, where we're spiritually distracted, or we commit out-and-out sin. Be very careful with alcohol, okay? Getting drunk is a sin. Be very careful with alcohol because I have seen so many young people indulge in alcohol and they make wise decisions. They make decisions that they regret for the rest of their lives. I've seen adults do it. That's why the warning comes in Proverbs chapter 23, verse 30. Those who linger long at the wine, those who go in search of mixed wine, do not look on wine when it's red, when it sparkles in the cup, when it swirls around smoothly. At the last, it bites like a serpent, and it stings like a viper. Your eyes will see strange things, and your heart will utter perverse things. Be wise in your entertainment. Don't be wayward. Okay, the fourth key to having a rec room, a family room that Jesus can dwell in is allow interruptions to your entertainment. Allow interruptions to your entertainment. In John chapter 2, verse 1, Jesus was enjoying a wedding at Canaan. He was having a good time, and all of a sudden they say, "Hey, we're out of wine." And so Jesus makes new wine. He didn't put them off. He did a miracle for the glory of God. We see in Luke chapter 7, verse 36, Jesus is at a dinner party, and he's interrupted. A lady comes in and begins washing his feet. And instead of shoving her away and say, "Hey, I'm at a party here. What do you think you're doing?" Jesus begins to teach a story about a person who had a large debt and someone who had a very small debt. And both men were forgiven. He says, "Who do you think loves more? The person who was forgiven a large debt or a small debt?" And the host of the dinner party says, "Well, the one who has been forgiven more." And he says, "Likewise, this woman here." And she was a prostitute. And the guy was thinking, if Jesus knew who she really was, if he really was a prophet, he'd kick her out. And he says, "She has come in here. She's washed my feet. You didn't wash my feet. You haven't done anything. She loves me more." And he forgave her sins. He didn't allow the entertainment as he was relaxing and being refreshed to get in the way of ministry. You see in Matthew chapter 14, Jesus is on a getaway to the lake. And people start bringing the sick and the demon possessed to him, and he prays for them. He heals them. He teaches them. And the disciples say, "Send him away." He says, "No, let's give him some lunch." And he makes, you know, like probably, you know, 50,000, fish sandwiches. He feeds them. And so in your entertainment, make time to minister to people who have needs and share the gospel. Don't get so caught up in your fun that don't allow interruptions for God to open a door and bring the kingdom of God to someone. That's the fourth key of our entertainment. That key is connected, again, to the dining room. The last key is prioritize margin for family and armor-bearer relationships. Say, "Craig, what is margin?" When you write a term paper, your teacher will say you have an inch margin or inch and a half margin, something like that. It's the amount of space that you leave on the outside of your paper. If you go to the outside margin, you've got no margin left. And we need to leave margin in our life. As we look at that chart, that you will look at your notes, and there's all the things that you have to do. That 38 hours of spare time, you need to leave margin for family and for armor-bearer relationships. Psalm 127, verse 3 says, children are an inheritance from the Lord. They are a reward from Him. When we dedicate babies, that's a verse that we use. And I always tell parents, there's three things that you can do with an inheritance. You can invest it, you can squander it, or you can ignore it. And we want to be people that invest in the inheritance that God has given us. How do you do that? Three things, three L's if you're taking notes. First of all, love them. Love them. Build a relationship with them. Take time with them. Read to them. Wrestle with them. Do tea parties with them. Paint with them. Draw with them. Play ball with them. Get on the floor and do cars. You know, have fun with them. When they get older, do a family night, play game nights, go bowling, do something like that. But have fun with your kids. Build that relationship. Go to their activities, their music recitals, their concerts, their games, whatever it might be. As you build that relationship with them, that's how you invest in them. The next L is lead them. Disciple them. Have family devotions. Pray with them before bed when they're little so they learn how to have their own devotions, how to talk to God. You read the Bible together, but you lead them. Model a devotional life yourself. Lead them into spiritual things. And the final L is limits. That means discipline them. You have boundaries. When they cross the boundaries, when they rebel, then there are consequences for it. We're told in Ecclesiastes 8:11, because the sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, therefore the heart of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. When our kids disobey, there needs to be a consequence so they don't grow up thinking, well, I can do whatever I want. There is no authority. I'm not accountable to anyone. And as you love your kids, as you lead your kids, as you put limits on your kids, that's how you invest in the treasure. Make time. And that takes time. That takes time. Leave margin for your family and also for armor-bearer relationships. And we've talked about an armor-bearer is an accountability partner. Someone who's asking you the tough questions. How is your bedroom? Are you staying sexually pure? How are you doing with your finances? How's your thought life? How's the study? How's the family room? Are you spending time with family? Someone who's keeping you accountable in the different rooms of the house, we need to have someone that can speak into our lives. The writer of Proverbs noted how important it was in Proverbs 27, verse 17, as iron sharpens iron, so a man sharpens the countenance of his friend. For the past 28 years, I've had different men be armor bearers in my life, and I can't tell you how much encouragement, support, but also spiritual challenge and inspiration it provides to me. It's one of the most important relationships that I've got is my armor bearer. And if we're going to walk and say, Jesus, I want you to dwell in every room of my life, someone who can speak into your life about any room is vitally important.
We hope that you've enjoyed today's message, and thanks again for joining us on the Casper Faith Podcast.